This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Most Broadway musicals get their subject matter from other media, and that is the case with the new musical Ghost, which opened last night at the Belk. But watching how the creators of this musical took on the challenge of bringing this movie to the stage is part of what makes it fun to see. I mean, how do you make a live actor appear to be a ghost who can move through doors without opening them? How indeed, and we'll find out a bit about how they rise to that challenge later in the program. First, something for everyone who lives in Charlotte. Whether you're a native or just moved here last week, local author and PR guru Harry Hoover has written The Untourist Guide to the Queen City, Moving to Charlotte. It is a compendium of everything you need to know to help you settle smoothly into town or take advantage of all the city has to offer. Harry Hoover joins us to share some of what he's uncovered for this book. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mike. Good to see you.
Good to see you again. This is part of a series of similar books for other cities. What other cities?
Yes, it is. The first two were Naples, Florida, and Sarasota, Florida. The publisher lives in Naples, and his idea for this series came from a trip he took to France with his wife. They came upon a book in French in Toulouse that loosely translated was The Untourist Guide to Toulouse. He said, that's a good idea. I think I'll take that back home. And he started thinking about what cities, how should I roll this out? And he wanted cities that were growing, that had great weather, that had economies, good economies, solid economies, a lot of outdoor activity. And so he started thinking about what cities made sense. And the one he lived in, Naples, mm-hmm. seemed to be a good one. A lot of retirement, people moving in for retirement. Then Sarasota, another growing town, and then Charlotte. And he asked me to write the Charlotte version.
And you obviously knew him before, or did he know about you?
Interestingly, he was, I call a DC, a digital colleague. I met him through social media about 5 or 6 years ago, and we had never met personally. We talked on the phone a couple of times, and we have since met, and we share a lot of interest, and that's how we got connected.
I should have pointed out that Harry Hoover is also a social media guru in Charlotte, and so you are living what you preach, and it's paid off.
It has.
you pretty much have lived all of your life here in Mecklenburg County. In fact, I read that your family dates back to 1751.
Yes, here the Hoover side of the family moved here in 1751.
To do what?
They had land in Lincoln County and farmed it. Well, it was not Lincoln County then, but it was really part of Mecklenburg. And then my side of the family moved across the river, the Catawba River, to the west side of Mecklenburg County in the 1770s.
Wow. So you've been here all your life. Your family's been here forever. You went away to college, of course, but you came back. And,
yes.
And I'm just curious if you had to really do any research for this book, or did it just come out of your brain because you've been here forever and you know it?
Well, somebody asked me how long it took me to write the book. I said, well, it took me about 2 months to write, but I've been researching it for 61 years.
Yeah, yeah. Anything surprised you as you approached this task?
It actually did. You know, you live in a place and you start your own on automatic pilot a lot, and you don't really think about what's going on. I started looking uptown at all the new buildings that were going up, all the condos and apartments that were happening uptown, and that was surprising. Another surprise was that we're 23% lower cost of living average than the top 40 metros.
Yeah, I want to talk about that a little bit later. The other thing that's surprising, at least to me, and I don't think many people know this, in South End, there are so many apartments that have gone up in the last year and a half, 2 years.
It's incredible.
It is mind-blowing. I don't know where those people are coming from. I mean, it's mind-blowing. And you really don't know it because it's sandwiched in between South Boulevard from about Bland to Remount, mm-hmm. and then sandwiched between South Boulevard and South Tryon Street. But it's like a small city in there.
And it's totally changing the character of that area, too, because a lot of those folks are young. They're mm-hmm. they're coming in, moving into apartments, and so it really has a kind of an interesting vibe down in that direction.
Oh, to be 20 again, huh?
Exactly.
This is called The Untourist Guide to Charlotte. Is that to say it would not be helpful to tourists or interesting to tourists?
No, it's not. The Untourist Guide, as I said, our publisher came up with that from that French book. It's really about the insider's guide, if you will.
Yeah.
Don't go see all the things that the tourists would go see. We want to tell you what's really happening in town.
Actually. This is a sidebar. Now, this is my personal opinion stepping into the forefront here. Actually, somebody needs to write, and maybe they already have, and I think we've probably done the show already, but a really well-focused tourist guide.
Yes.
Because you see people walking around this city with cameras and looking up at, like, it's like they're in Manhattan, looking up at the tops of the buildings, and you think, well, they're from out of town, because people here don't do that. And I'm wondering why they're here. What are the attractions for them? So somebody needs to write that. That's your next assignment.
I'm on it.
So what's in this book that might intrigue a tourist? And what's in this book that would be of no interest to a tourist but would be of interest to those of us who moved here?
Well, let me say this about tourists. I handled the North Carolina tourism business for 10 years. And one of the things we know is that tourism leads to residents.
Ah.
A lot of tourists come to an area, find that they like it, and end up moving here. And that was one of the things that we tried to do with the North Carolina program, was to entice people here and then get them to enjoy what we have here.
Well, it's working, isn't it?
I think it is. I think it is, because we've got such incredible growth here. But I think there are a lot of things in the book that a tourist would like to know. They might like to know about the great neighborhoods that we have. And a lot of people like to drive through really nice neighborhoods through the shady trees that we have, like in the Myers Park area. So I think they would appreciate that. And we do a lot about, we talk about dining. And I've got sidebars in the book from subject matter experts, if you will. Sarah Croslin, who is a freelance writer and works at the Charlotte Observer, wrote a piece for me on basically on fresh food. Where do you go to the market to get fresh vegetables, and what are some of the good restaurants in town? A young freelance writer named Harry Hoover III did something on nightlife for me.
Yes, I've read his article because I thought that name sounds familiar. And at the end of it, there's a little bio on Harry Hoover III that says he's out of college, essentially. And I've forgotten the exact terminology, but he is now experiencing with sampling all the cocktails in town.
Yes, he is.
I forgot. The wording is more elegant than that and pretty clever, actually, but I got the point. Before you started writing this book, I know that you conducted a survey of people who had relocated here. What did you want to know from them, and what did they tell you? What kinds of things did they tell you?
Well, I was looking to confirm our idea about what should be in the book. What do you want to know about? And we asked them questions about what would you like to know about, and one of the top answers was, I'd like to have known more about the neighborhoods before I got here.
Hmm.
So that was one of the things that I tried to focus on is to give people an overview of what is available in Charlotte. Everything from the resort lifestyle to the north and the south on the lakes to the center city and the new condos and the apartments there, and then the historic neighborhoods.
When they say to you that they would like to have known more about the neighborhoods, is that to indicate to you that perhaps they chose the wrong neighborhood to move into?
That's what I took from that. Hmm. And they also wanted to know about schools, which go together. If you're a family, you want to be in the neighborhood near the top schools.
One of the things that you found out from these people is that most people that you talk to either love or like this city. There are very few haters. I mean, the percentage of haters is tiny in comparison to the people who love or like it.
That's true.
Is that unusual for a city this size?
I think it probably...
Or for any city.
I think it probably is. I think Charlotte draws a certain kind of person. And if you're that kind of person, if you're an optimistic, positive, outgoing, can-do sort of person, I think you thrive in Charlotte. And the whiners don't. And I think they probably leave, which is probably why you don't have as many haters.
How do you explain that ethos? How does the city get that ethos?
It starts from the first settlers, I think. We had Scots-Irish and German settlers, very tied to the land and tied to the church. They've always built businesses.
You know, and the Irish are not supposed to be the most optimistic people. I mean, they're kind of fatalists, aren't they?
They sort of are. I've got some Scots-Irish in my background. Was raised as a Presbyterian. They built schools when they got here because they thought everybody should be able to read so that they could study the Bible. And they've always gone out of their way. There are a lot of apocryphal stories about Charlotte. Whether they're true or not is another question. But there's the story about when Mecklenburg County was made a county, and they were looking for a courthouse for to be used. And all the lawyers lived out near Albemarle, where Albemarle is now, thus Lawyers Road, back into Charlotte, because people in Charlotte built a courthouse and said, we've got one you can use. When the railroad came through, it stopped in Salisbury.
Right.
The story is that Charlotte leaders got together, went to Raleigh, went to South Carolina, and said, Charlotte's a great place to bring those two railroad lines together. It's the most direct point. And that happened. And Charlotte became a big transportation city because of it.
We're not afraid to ask.
No, we're not.
Even though we have no business asking.
Exactly.
In many cases.
Exactly.
And nine times out of ten, it seems that when we ask, they say, okay.
We punch above our weight here in Charlotte.
Yeah, how about that? This is the city is the center of a 16-county metro, and you mentioned that in the book, of course, but you spend most of your time talking about Mecklenburg County, and you mention a few things just on the periphery of Mecklenburg County. And Charlotte is almost all of Mecklenburg County.
True.
Why did you concentrate on just Charlotte when so many other areas like Gastonia and Davidson and Concord and Kannapolis and Salisbury make up part, and York County and Rock Hill make up so much of this area?
Well, Charlotte is the economic heart of the 16-county region. And it's hard to cover 16 counties in a book of this size. So I wanted to focus on Charlotte. And I asked Pat Riley, who's the president of Allen Tate, to do a piece about what's going on in the outlying areas, and he wrote a sidebar on that. So we tried to give it some coverage, but I realized that you can't do it all.
You start with 11 reasons that Charlotte might be right for you. How did you arrive at the list?
It's my list.
Why 11, by the way?
Well,
it's an odd number.
Having been in advertising and PR for 35 years, one of the things I've learned is people love lists, and they love odd-numbered lists for some reason. I don't know why. But I came up with those because it's what is special to Charlotte, to me, about Charlotte.
Number one on the list are the four seasons that we experience, but number two is our trees. And we've all been bemoaning the loss of tree canopy in recent years, but you report that in 2013, American Forests named Charlotte one of the 10 best cities for urban forests.
True.
In your survey of the people who moved here, did they cite the trees as a reason for being here?
I had some comments about people added things that said, what do they like about the town? And people talked about the trees and the lush growth here.
And you've already mentioned this, but I want to come back to it, because you report that we have a low cost of living when compared to many other cities. And this is something that may surprise a lot of people, because you hear a lot of grousing about how much it costs to live here, the rents, the taxes, et cetera. We have the 12th lowest cost of living?
Yes, among the top 40 metro areas. And it's primarily because of the our housing cost, because housing is our housing costs were really good. When you look at the list of things that they look at to compile that list, our cost of housing was really good.
Both rental and to purchase?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Harry Hoover's our guest. His book is called Moving to Charlotte. It's an untourist guide to the city, which contains a lot of information for people who have moved here and over the years and who are considering moving here. It might help you pick the right place to live, among other things. We're going to talk more about that in a moment. First, we take a little break. We'll come in right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAU. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Culture and Heritage Museums, hosting Susie Boggess, a folk artist and country music singer, frequent guest on the Prairie Home Companion, April 5th, 7:30 at McKelvey Center in York. Tickets at chmuseums.org. You know, Google is considering Charlotte as one of the next locations for their high-speed fiber optic internet service. Can you hear my hands going? Yeah. And Charlotte is actively courting them. But being the next Google Fiberhood could have a lot of positive implications for the city, for you, for businesses, for the local economy. We're going to talk to some people working locally with Google on logistics and planning for this potential network tomorrow morning at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, GM recalls related to faulty ignition switches and other defects now exceed 6 million vehicles. CEO Mary Barra and the top auto regulator answer questions on Capitol Hill, GM, government regulators, and consumer safety.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. In a few minutes, we go behind the scenes of the new production of Ghost, which opened last night at the Belk Theater. But we're talking to Harry Hoover in this segment. Harry Hoover, a longtime PR advertising guy, used to be in the media, and has written a book called Moving to Charlotte, The Untourist Guide. One of the things that I really enjoyed personally out of this is that you talk about you have a chapter on Charlotte history, and then you have one on getting around, and then you have a chapter on Charlotte's weather, which you title Moderation for All Seasons, which I know sends shivers down the spine of every television station general manager in Charlotte who has laid out millions of dollars in Super Doppler Radar Plus, or whatever they're calling it this week, so that we can bring you the latest weather. There is no weather. It never happens.
You're right. It doesn't.
And that's an attractive thing, right?
It's a very attractive thing. People don't like to live in the way of hurricanes, in the way of tornadoes. The worst thing we have here is lightning.
Okay. Because you say weather is about the last thing you'll need to worry about.
Exactly.
Here. Well, what about snow? We got snow for a minute and a half this winter.
We did. And it was gone the next day. That's the way we like it here in Charlotte.
And that's one of the things that makes it attractive.
I think so. Okay. And I think a lot of people feel that way.
When you talk to people, because as we said, you did this survey of people who have moved here. And is that one of the things they cite?
Weather? That was very high up on the list.
Why do you suppose? Because you've been in the media and you've been in PR and advertising for years here in town. Why do you think we have this focus on weather then on television? I mean, it's the end all be all.
It's in every metro market,
yes,
you go
why?
To. But why?
Yes, why here? There is no weather.
I know.
It's like living in Miami.
It really is. You know it's going to rain every day at 3 in Miami, right?
That's right. All right, you get into a lot of things that people might want to consider before they move here, like home prices and taxes. And again, contrary to what a lot of people may think about the cost of living here, taxes are low. Property taxes are low when you compare us to other cities around the country.
No question about it.
Why don't we know that?
You know, I don't know. People always seem to think that their prices are higher where they live than they actually are.
So what are
perception?
Where do you rank us? Where do we rank? Not where you rank us. Where do we rank in terms of property taxes and other taxes that we have to
That was another big factor in our low cost of living, mm-hmm. the fact that we're the 12th lowest cost in those top 40 metro markets. I think we were 6th or 7th in that ranking of property tax on that list of top 40
metro
markets.
It's amazing, because we do hear a lot of people complaining about how taxes are high here, and you're saying that essentially they are not.
Property taxes are not high, and we have a fairly low state income tax as well compared to other states.
Since your family has been here since 1751, I don't want to slight the chapter that you did on Charlotte history. We've just done a lot of shows on Charlotte history, but newcomers may look around and say, this city was built last week. Because everything looks brand spanking new.
It's true.
And a friend of mine from New York came to visit once and said, where is old Charlotte?
It's in the plaques that you see in the sidewalk. Charlotte's fine with history as long as it doesn't get in the way of progress.
That's right. But Dan Morrow will take us to task for saying these things. So I will quickly add that he says there's history all around you. You just have to look for it.
You do. It's true.
But the history of Charlotte dates back to pre-Revolutionary War times, and there's some relatively significant things that have happened here over the time.
There are. And there are a lot of things that people don't know about. Like in 1740, some men from Pennsylvania moved to Mecklenburg County and started the Mecklenburg Rifle Company. And we were very...
Was there anything here then?
There was nothing here in 1740. But they started this manufacturing facility making rifles, which did help outfit us for the Revolutionary War.
And we were the Confederate Naval Yard.
Yes, we were.
Which really perplexes a lot of people, because you would think of a naval yard being near a body of water.
You would think
there
that.
There was no water here then.
No, there was no water, but we had great rail ties from Charleston through Raleigh and up to Norfolk. So that's why we got it. Those ports were blockaded by the Union, so they had to have some place to fix the boats.
I want to get back to the comment that you made earlier in the program about many of the people that you talked to in the course of doing this book said that they wish they had had more information about neighborhoods before they came here. But neighborhoods, the quality of a neighborhood, or even describing a neighborhood, is pretty subjective. So what did they want to know? What could you possibly tell somebody about a neighborhood that would say, ooh, that's for me, or ooh, that's not for me?
It is very subjective. And for people ask me, you know, I wish I'd known the right neighborhood to move in. Well, I can't tell you what the right neighborhood is for you. I can tell you what it is for me.
Uh-huh.
What I try to do is go in and talk about the character of the neighborhoods, like our old streetcar suburbs, and talk about the type of housing you'll find there and the amenities around that neighborhood. And the schools, but you got to make up your own mind.
Yeah.
All I can do is give you that kind of brief overview. And I encourage people who move here to rent first so that they can get the lay of the land and figure out where they want to move. Because I've met a lot of people who have moved in and gone into a neighborhood, and immediately they were like, oh, this is the wrong one for me.
And we're changing the character of neighborhoods today a lot, particularly the downtown areas, because there are neighborhoods now downtown where there were none before, or where we took them out and now are replacing them.
Yes,
but they're completely different from the neighborhoods that were here.
No question about it. With Fourth Ward still has a similar quality to it's from when it started, but now you've got all the new condos going up around, so you've got the high-rises popping up even in Fourth Ward, so that is changing the character.
Yeah, and then Third Ward you described that as probably the most eclectic downtown neighborhood.
Yes.
Because it's a hodgepodge of a lot of different
things. It is a hodgepodge, and it's it was broken up years ago with when they started rerouting streets, and that sort of changed the character and kind of cut it up into small pieces. And I think it's starting to come back together. You got the all that development down there. You've got the sports arenas, you've got the ballpark, and it's a very interesting place to live now, I think.
Pat Riley, who you've already mentioned, the president and COO of Allen Tate, which is the largest real estate firm in the region, you had him write a sidebar, and in that he mentions some of our peculiarities that newcomers should take note of, and one of them I never even think about is that we say hey instead of hi.
We do.
Has that always been the case? You've been here all your life.
Since I was a kid.
Why do you suppose that is?
I don't know.
Is that a Southern thing or a Charlotte thing?
I think it's a Southern thing.
Okay.
But we've always said it.
And don't think that a person is being nosy if they come up to you in the grocery store and ask about a product.
No.
In your cart.
No. People are curious, and we're fairly open people. We'll strike up a conversation with you.
Again, is that Southern or is that Charlotte?
I think that's probably Southern as well.
Riley also said that Charlotte is unusual in that the government functions without having a strong mayoral system.
True.
Well, thank goodness for that.
Exactly.
This was written well in advance of Patrick Cannon, right?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
I was surprised by the list in the book of Charlotte's largest employers. We always talk about the banks. We talk about Bank of America. We talked about Wachovia, now Wells Fargo. We talked about BB&T. All these banks that are here, we always talk about them. Far and away, the number one employer here is Carolina's healthcare system.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not even close.
It's not.
32,500 people work for the healthcare system. Number two is Wells at 20,000. And Bank of America, what has happened to them? 15,000 people. Get with the program, bank.
They need to work on that.
I mean, seriously, why do we think of this as a city of banks when it's a city of healthcare professionals?
Well, we've had long ties to the financial community. And, with First Union years ago, forming with Cameron Brown to make one of the largest banking facilities in the country, I just think because of the consolidation of banking here in those early years back in the 80s, that we still think of ourselves as a financial player. And so, we are in terms of the assets under management.
Well, if you go through the list of big employers, Carolinas Healthcare is number one, Wells Fargo, which actually really surprised me that Wells Fargo, which the old Wachovia, would be number two. Then it's Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools. They employ 18,000-plus people, and Bank of America only 15,000. Did that surprise you, these numbers?
Not really. We've always had a fairly robust government employment between City of Charlotte, Mecklenburg County, and the schools. So that didn't really surprise me that much. I was sort of surprised about Bank of America being that far down the list.
Do you think that's a new development since Hugh McCall left? Or
I think it is, but I think with all the mergers that have happened, they've I think they've pushed jobs into other areas.
And when you talk about jobs at Bank of America, are you talking about Merrill Lynch jobs as well, or just bank jobs?
I think it's Bank of America. I think
so. When you add in Merrill Lynch and maybe their mortgage subsidiaries,
probably gets it up a little higher.
A little higher, and then of course all the lawyers that
yes
that support the bank. So, given that Carolina's healthcare system is the number one employer, it should come as no surprise that nursing is the number one profession.
Yes.
It came as a surprise to me, I'll tell you that.
It's big here,
big. That's amazing to me that there are more nurses than anybody else in town. Is that a growing category, or is it? Are we in stasis?
I think that remains to be seen with all the changes that are happening in healthcare. I don't think that's clear at this point.
So given the size of the city, in terms of population, are we over healthcared, or do we have a great deal of healthcare in comparison to other cities of this size, or not enough? Where do we?
I think we probably have more healthcare than we need for a city of this size. But a lot of people from the outlying areas do come into Mecklenburg County for healthcare as well.
And we're actively pursuing trying to become the best at certain areas like heart surgery, pediatric cancer, and things like that.
Exactly.
Is that because there's a need for that here, or is it simply because of local ambitions?
I think it's probably local ambitions. You know, Charlotte, as we said, likes to do things big.
Yeah. You closed the book with another list that I found some surprises on. We were named the happiest city for job-seeking college graduates. Why?
I think that's because when this was done, there were a lot of jobs available, and we were in the midst of the downturn, and Charlotte was a place where you could get hired.
So when did you do this survey?
When
did they do this
survey? That survey was done in October of 2013. I think, yeah, October.
Well, but we were still in recovery.
We're still in recovery, but we were one of the first metro regions that was bouncing back and starting up when you started having some hiring again.
Happiest city for job seeking college graduates. I've never seen that category before, so I'm just curious who came in number two.
Yeah,
we were the fastest growing metro from 2000 to 2012, according to the census, and we have been named. And I'm not sure this is a good thing, Harry. We've been named a spring break destination.
For families.
What does that mean?
It means we don't have to worry about all the young children like they do going down to Panama City Beach every year.
Well, because years ago, in the, I guess, the 80s, the early 80s, when I was living in another city and I was talking to professionals who came here all the time, they would say, "You don't want to go to Charlotte." And I would say, "Why not?" And they said, "Because it's just so," and these are all young people talking to me.
Sure.
"Because it's just, if you got three kids in a Winnebago, go to Charlotte. If you don't, Atlanta." Does that still hold true?
I don't think it holds true anymore, but I think that is still out there. I think people still think that about Charlotte. But when you look at all the things that have happened here with arts and culture and museums, the Whitewater Center, we have so many things to do now that we didn't 20 years ago.
So I have a list here that was in the Huffington Post somewhere, and one of the things, and it's a very catty list. They really take us to task.
Oh, they do take us to task. I saw that a couple of weeks ago.
What the heck did I do with it? It's on this desk someplace, but it talks about how we don't have any river here to speak of, but we do have the Whitewater Center.
Yes.
Why is it located here? It's a mystery to them. It's a mystery to us. Sure, the center would make more sense in, say, Colorado, but that's why Charlotte is weird. It's here. Because the list is 15 reasons why Charlotte is the weirdest city. Given our recent economy, it may also surprise a lot of people, because it surprised me, that Forbes named Charlotte as the best city for jobs in 2013, and Beyond.com, whoever they are, said of the top 50 cities, Charlotte had the most job openings per capita last year. Now, we have John Connaughton, who is the keeper of the North Carolina Economic Forecast, on this program every 3 months to talk about the economy. And jobs are lagging. Jobs are gone. They're not coming back, blah, 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 blah. Things must be really bleak elsewhere.
Jobs are lagging everywhere.
If we are at the top of the list here.
Yeah.
I'm not sure to be pleased by that or not.
Well, I'm not either. Damned with faint praise, I think.
Yeah.
But we have a very diverse economy. As we said, it's not just finance. It's IT. It's nursing. It's healthcare. So there's a wide variety of jobs here.
Hmm. We were also named the best city for newlyweds in 2013 by Rent.com. So I'm taking it that comes from our rental prices.
Yes.
Or the number of apartments available.
Yes.
And
to
rent.
When you have supply, you have lower prices.
You know, this strikes me as a book that needs to be updated frequently, because things change. And if you're going to cite lists like these, they're out of date almost the minute the ink dries on the paper.
Yes.
So what's the plan? And since you are the social capital, not the social capital, but the social media guru, what do you do about that?
You update it. And that's the beauty of print-on-demand technology. There aren't thousands of these printed and sent to bookstores all over the place. They're printed as needed, and we can go in and fairly quickly update it.
So this keeps you in a job for the rest of your natural-born life.
I'll hand it off to my son.
Yes, if he can break away from sampling the cocktail scene. What about the cocktail scene? Because we are developing this cocktail scene.
We really are, and craft beer scene.
Yes.
Which my son really likes. He's been around all the craft breweries.
You need to sit down and have a talk with that boy.
I probably do.
Let me see here. I'm looking at the back of the book here. And one of the things that you've talked about is shopping centers. And you point out Park Road Shopping Center mm-hmm. as a place that people ought to see, even if they don't shop there, because it hasn't changed much
really hasn't.
Since the day it was built. Almost every town has a Park Road Shopping Center like place, don't they?
I think they do. I'm not sure they have any as eclectic as the one that we have.
Although that's about to change.
It is about to change.
Yeah. You think it's a mistake?
I do. I like the Black Hawk Hardware and the Park Road Books and that weird conglomeration of other shops that are in there.
Mm-hmm. You also list all of the media in town. And usually when a list comes out like that, somebody is left off.
I'm sure.
Or miscategorized.
I'm sure.
I went through this list with a fine-tooth comb, and I think you got it right.
Thank you.
How did you do that? Because no one else can seem to do it. How did you do it?
I went to about 15 different sources and put it all together in a spreadsheet and did it that way.
Harry Hoover's book is called Moving to Charlotte, The Untourist Guide. It's available for people who just moved here, thinking about moving here, who have lived here all their lives, and for tourists.
Exactly.
Who might find something in here that might give them a place to go or something to see or something to do. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Mike.
When we come back, we talk about Ghost at the Belk. Stay with us. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members at Hickory Choral Society, presenting their spring concert at First Baptist Church, 339 2nd Avenue Northwest in Hickory, Sunday, April 6th at 3 p.m., hickorychoralsociety.org. GM Chief Mary Barra and the top auto regulator answer questions on Capitol Hill on faulty ignition switches. Diane Rehm and her panel of guests talk about GM, government regulators, and consumer safety in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show. And when we come back, we bring back the curtain on Ghost with the actual ghost. I think he's going to be here in three dimensions. Stay with us.
We'll be right back. I'm John Hockenberry, host of The Takeaway. WFAE and I would like to thank all of you who have chosen to support the station through a financial commitment during the last pledge drive. Your membership allows us to continue to provide quality programming you hear every day. Thanks. We appreciate your support.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Now, here's a song you may have heard before.
Oh, Molly, my darling, I've hungered for your touch, oh, such a long lonely time.
This Righteous Brothers hit was used in the movie Ghost.
Cause I need your love.
But no, that's not the Righteous Brothers, and the ghost we're going to spend time talking about isn't that of the movie. It's the Broadway musical that opened at the Belk last night for a week-long run.
Your love to
you probably know the story of Sam and Molly, two lovers separated by a murder and brought back together by a medium. But how do you accomplish that with live actors on a stage?
Sam? Is that you?
Molly?
I can hear you.
Ghosts in other musicals, Carousel, for instance. In that classic, Billy Bigelow is a ghost at the end, and he speaks to Julie, but she only hears him. She doesn't see him, and he doesn't have to walk through walls or doors. That's easy to do in a film, not so easy on stage, and we're going to talk about how they accomplish some of the illusions in Ghost, the musical, that even David Copperfield was blown away by. We're joined in the flesh by Stephen Grant Douglas, who plays Sam, the ghost, and Carla R. Stewart, who is Oda Mae, the medium. Welcome to both of you.
Hey, thank you. It's great to be here.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here. Wake up now. Come on. It's early. And for the first time in our Broadway series conversations, we get to talk to the person who makes everything you see on the stage actually happen on cue, at least most nights. The stage manager, Andrew Bacigalupo.
Hello.
Did I get it right?
You did.
Good.
Yes.
Welcome to the program. Never had a stage manager on the program. You want to call the cues?
Sure.
This is Q104.6.
Yep.
All right. This movie struck a chord in a lot of people. And why do you suppose that is? What is it about this story, these two people, that has fascinated audiences?
I think that there's a lot to be said for what love is, and what how people define love, and then if it you know surpasses this lifetime, if it surpasses this world, and Ghost, the story really creates this idea that we have energy beyond our bodies, and after Sam passes, he is unable to move on because of something that he can't define, and as the story goes on, you really start to, he starts to, and the audience starts to unfold, you know, the reasons why he hasn't moved on.
You know, as I watched this last night, and I saw the movie when it came out. When did it come out?
1990.
Wow, it's a long time ago. I was thinking to myself, and most actors, when they're reading a script, because it's all about my line, blah, 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 uh-huh. my line, and they get to page 16, and wait a minute. They kill me off.
He dies?
I die? I don't want this part, but this is a show where you do want it.
About 15 minutes into the show, yeah.
You want that to happen because
of course.
That's where the magic starts,
right?
Is the romanticism of the story what makes this a good candidate to be a musical? Because a lot of musicals are, well, almost all of them are love stories, aren't they? Really, when you come right down to it?
I think what makes this a great musical is this. It's so many different there's the romance, but then there's also this thriller happening at the same time.
So and comedy. You are the comic relief in this show.
So there's so many things, like, for everyone. So I think that's why it's so appealing to each audience that we go to or that sees the show, because there's just, it's not just one theme. So it's so many different things.
You know, people, there are some laughs throughout the show.
Absolutely.
But when you come on, people, the comedy has begun. You're playing the Whoopi Goldberg character.
I am.
And that's got to be, I would think, intimidating, because not only does she put her stamp on everything she does, but it's there forever. It's on film.
Yeah.
So you're not like her.
No, I didn't want to be a carbon copy at all. So, I mean, the way I approached it is I just remembered what I saw from the movie years ago, and then I had the privilege of seeing it on Broadway. So I was very familiar with the piece. So in order to not be a carbon copy of Whoopi Goldberg, which most people already expect you to be, because, I mean, my grandmother, she doesn't even think of it as Oda Mae. She always, I call, hey, Grandma, hey, Whoopi. You know, so everyone is always, like, thinking of Whoopi Goldberg no matter what. So I had to work, you know, hard to not even, to make you kind of forget about it, you know, or to just love something about this Oda Mae, you know?
And, of course, you're playing the Patrick Swayze role. And
yeah, I mean, Patrick Swayze, Whoopi Goldberg, Demi Moore, even Tony Goldwyn, those are all sort of household names now, which can be very intimidating. But, you know, we had a very supportive creative team. Mm-hmm. And so coming into day one, I was intimidated to fill some of these big shoes. Even Richard Fleischman, who played the role, he originated it on Broadway. He's a great actor, really talented guy. And you know, from day one, it was sort of how can I tackle this role, and then how can I personalize it? How can I make this embody the character and not risk trying to, like Carla said, recreate something that someone else has already done?
There are five main characters in the show. There's Sam and Molly and Carl and Oda Mae and the special effects.
Yes.
That's great.
This show is, I think, of all the shows that have come through here, is the most technically difficult, impressive thing we've ever seen. What's it like to be in charge of that? You are the stage manager. People don't know what stage managers do, but I would love to see your prompt book, because it must be the size of the phone book.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little, it's got a lot in it. I mean, it's definitely interesting. This show, yes, is very involved. You know, we have other shows, Wicked. Yeah, they fly Elphaba. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Everybody knows that's going to happen. But we make people disappear. We make people appear. We make people, you know, there's a lot that we're doing that you don't see in anything else. I mean, this is stuff that you aren't going to see anywhere else.
And it begins with the overture. I came to the conclusion several years ago that unless you're doing a classic Broadway show where the people in the audience know, come in whistling the songs, they know every song in the show, or unless you have an overture like the overture to Gypsy, which is iconic, you should dispense with overtures, because it just gets in the way and you're sitting there looking at the empty curtain. Your overture, however, is like being at a movie. Yeah. It is a movie.
Yeah, and the way the show, when they directed it, Matthew Workus, when he directed it, it is very, he directed it to be like a movie, because, of course, the show is based off of a movie. So, you know, we use a lot of LED screens, we use projections, we use a lot of video.
And I've never seen anything like it, because the LED screens upstage of you, behind you, are, they can be either fully visible or you can see through them.
Yeah, and that helps create a lot of effects. Yeah. And our biggest, one of the coolest sections that I like is the subway section in Act One. You know, we're going to project a subway screen on the front of this LED wall, but behind it, we're going to be on a subway train in New York City going through the streets of New York.
And the perspective the audience sees of the train constantly changes.
Yeah.
How mind-boggling is that?
I've heard it looks really, really cool.
You've never seen it, have you? It looks very cool. It looks like you're on the train, and suddenly the camera has changed perspective, and you're all in the same positions, but in a different point of view.
Right, right.
Challenging, I would think.
Absolutely. There's a lot of precision that goes into our show every night. We worked hands-on with our illusionist, Paul Keeve. He hand-created all of the illusions for the show when it originated, and Paul was amazing at showing us how important timing and precision and commitment to the art form of illusions and magic is. And one of the things that we kind of all take in and remember that he said was, even if you feel like you're not doing it right, just think that you're really good at it, and you will be.
That's really interesting. That's good advice.
Yeah, it's very good
because advice. It does depend on misdirection, and it depends on timing.
Exactly,
and you cannot be late.
Right,
because if you're late, the illusion is
gone. It doesn't work. Yeah,
and it all begins with what we're about to hear here. I mean, there is a moment in the beginning where you are setting up your apartment, mm-hmm. and what we're seeing is the city in front of you and behind you, and things swirling all around you, which is pretty darn impressive. But the real illusions all begin with Sam's death.
Hey, you!
Yeah, I'm talking to USA.
Sam, oh my God.
Just let me handle this.
Your wallet.
Give it to him.
All right. Look, you take my money. You just leave my wallet, okay?
I said, your damn wallet!
No, Sam. I need the wallet!
Never cabrón!
Okay.
I'll kill you! Give it to me, man!
Please.
Molly, get out of here!
Why am I not?
Get out of here,
you, man!
Sam, hold on, baby. We're gonna be okay.
Molly?
Call an ambulance, please!
Molly, you all right?
Somebody! Oh, God, Sam! Stay
now,
with me, Sam.
What you can't see here, obviously, this is radio, is that Sam is he's dead on the floor, but he's also standing up talking. And it happens in the blink of an eye. And this happens several times in the show where somebody is alive one second and dead the next.
And looking at their dead body.
And looking at their dead bodies. Right. I mean, You want to give that away for us? You want to tell us how that happened?
I would love to.
Well, go right ahead.
Kill you, but, and every listener here. But
Well, I think the way that how I explain it to people is that everything that you're seeing is happening on stage in front of you. You know, we're not projecting a body onto the ground. The body is really there.
Because that's how I thought it was going to happen. I thought he will die, and suddenly on a video screen behind him, he will rise from the dead. But that's not how it happens.
Exactly. And that's not how any of it works. There's not just like a body dummy laying there on the ground. I mean, what we're doing is we are tricking your eye to seeing what we want you to see. Mm-hmm. We're, you know, the way that he's directed to stand in a certain place, or the sound of the gunfire, or the way that he's saying his line is making you look at a different place on stage. And then in the meantime, we're doing something else that remains to be disclosed on the other side of the stage that is making this illusion happen.
And you're involved in this because at one point Sam enters your body to be able to speak, and the next thing we know, he's actually there in our presence. Is this difficult to learn as an actor? Or is this just another thing where, you know, they stand, move over there? Is it just like that, or is there more to it than that?
I think that for me personally, every night there comes like the moment right before the illusion happens that I just take a breath and I go, all right, I hope that this, you know, is smooth, and I hope that this is this is right.
Seamless.
You know, yeah, and seamless. And sometimes we get applause on some of the illusions and sometimes we don't. And when we don't, I feel like the audience is listening to the story more. You know what I mean?
Right.
And instead of reacting to it. But yeah, one question I get asked a lot is if I get nervous, like before a show. And the answer to that is the only thing that I get nervous about is achieving what I believe to be our shows and my own potential.
Yeah.
So that would be the answer to, you know, before an illusion happens, I sort of, there's not a whole lot of time to think about it, but I just kind of, in the back of your head, you're kind of like, all right, I hope this goes well. I hope this goes smooth. And I'm happy to say that we've done the show almost 200 times and it's gone smooth every time.
And how much of that depends on what you do as the stage manager?
Well, I mean, you've
got to be there. You can't.
Yeah,
follow,
if I don't call the cue, then the illusion doesn't go on.
And the other thing people have to know about is, obviously, you travel with your own sound guy, your own conductor, part of your own orchestra, maybe the whole orchestra. I'm not sure, but you're operating with local people who are pulling, raising and lowering the flies and running the spots, and they don't get a lot of rehearsal time before that first opening night.
And the costume changes,
yes,
as well.
Yeah, the costumers backstage helping you to change clothes, they're all local. Mm-hmm. That's got to be, the first night has to be very.
Exactly. I mean, last night we started the show, we had 29 people that have never worked on this show before join us for the show. I mean, that's stressful and it's challenging, but if, you know, it was one of our best openings that we've had.
Really?
You know, for our crew, excuse me,
that's okay.
For our crew, we've had, you know, we have our team of 15 crew that we travel with the show, and they are able to, you know, convey what needs to happen and explain and teach all of the parts to these local people, but there's still 29 people that have never done the show before. And so they have to coach them along the way as, okay, you know, go a little bit faster, a little bit slower.
Right.
Okay, you have to stand here, do this here, do that there. And, you know, it makes the show happen seamlessly. And we are lucky to have, you know, our great crew along with each city's great crew to be able to make it happen.
And by Saturday night, most cities' crews are, you know, ready to do it and they know exactly what they're doing, and we leave the next day. So we do two more shows and then we take off.
Timing is everything. Timing yes. is everything. There is a moment in the show where you walk through a door. I think I know how it's done.
Oh, you do?
I think I do.
All right.
I won't say on the air, because if I'm right, it'll spoil the whole thing. And I won't ask you how it's done, but you do it every night, and you don't seem any worse the wear for it. So, A Ghost plays through Sunday at the Belk Theater. You can get tickets at BlumenthalArts.org. Stephen Grant Douglas plays Sam Carl with Stewart's Oda May, and Andrew Bacicalupo is the
yes.
stage manager.
It's amazing, Molly. The love inside. Take it with you. See ya.